Hello everyone, this is Matt, and welcome to another episode of Takeout with Ashley Coff RD and Robin O'Brien, discussing better, not perfect nutrition and the new food economy. Who's up for a food awakening? Today we're lucky to have Jeff Catch on the show. Jeff serves as the Chief Impact Officer at the Rodale Institute. Jeff is responsible for expanding Rodale Institute's global influence in healing people and the planet by unlocking the transformational power of regenerative organic agriculture. As Chief Impact Officer, Jeff leads the development and execution of the Institute's core strategies, overseeing opportunities for partnership and co-investment that drive positive outcomes for Rodale's philanthropic and pragmatic initiatives. The Rodale Institute is a non-profit dedicated to pioneering organic farming through research and outreach. For more than 70 years, they've been researching the best practices for organic agriculture and sharing their findings with farmers and scientists throughout the world, advocating for policies to support farmers and educating consumers about how going organic is the healthiest option for people and the planet. Looking forward to this one as always. I love my organic options. Always looking for organic when I can. So looking forward to what Jeff has to say. So over to you, ladies.
Everyone, it's been a beat, but Robin and I are super happy and grateful to be back here with you, and also really to be grateful here to connect with each other. At whatever point you're listening to this, I am sure that you will either recall that we had a pandemic that brought us all home to learn, you know, new phrases like sheltering in place or quarantine or lockdown. And, you know, Robin, I will say for me personally, the greatest strain, my family is all over the country, and the greatest strain for me right now is thinking about how I can connect with them. You know, we were supposed to, on the eve of this, actually all get together for spring break, and I was so looking forward to that. But I also am choosing to look at it as never before has it been more important to me to really be intentional about, you know, how I'm checking in with everyone. And so we're finding a lot of fun apps. I think I was just telling you, I got a Marco Polo app video from my 2-year-old niece, courtesy of my brother, where she was dancing to Live and Let Die from Guns N' Roses. And that, like, I think that was all I needed in my day. So I think, you know, I'm starting to figure out a cadence for connecting with people. But one of the things that in this time period that I'm really aware of as I go into the grocery store and talking to my parents about where they can order food delivery from. And, you know, my brother who's working in the hospital, what he has available is, you know, I've always said like better, not perfect, and really hoped that we would never, you know, like just say, oh, it has to be all organic, or, you know, oh, you can only buy that this particular fruit is better than that particular fruit, or, you know, any of these things. And I think there's never been a more important time for us to have that democratization, especially even within like the nutrition world. So, you know, it's kind of like a lot of the shakedown of things we've talked about over the last couple of years here at Takeout. I think some things are just being forced to the forefront. And you're the person I always want to connect with and talk about it. So I'm glad we have this time.
I know. I'm so glad, too. And I think, you know, we really are, all of us, the whole world, clearly in an, you know, this uncharted territory. And for me, I do. I mean, maybe it's because we have 4 kids, but it's like we've all been sent to time out and to stop and really actually think about our behaviors and think about the patterns and just think about sort of the habits that we've been in. And I mean, I know that you are insanely busy. I am too. And one of the challenges I had was I was on a flight all the time the first couple of months of the year as we were raising the soil fund for replant. And, you know, it was not sustainable. And it's made us all sit down and pause and think, you know, what can we be doing more efficiently through Zoom or these other online platforms? And what are some of the habits that have just been in place, you know, that we haven't actually stopped to think about whether we need to continue moving them forward? And that is just such a perfect intro for our guest today, because I think nothing is more habitual than the food system. And we have inherited a very broken one. And so it's given us the opportunity to really sit down and think about what are the opportunities now in front of us to really think about our food system and build out a smarter model.
Absolutely. And we both consider the gentleman that is joining us one of our closest friends and allies in this food movement. Jeff Catch, I want to say welcome. I just love, gosh, I think back, I don't, it might, it's years, like it, we might be about 15 years, you know, to when we first met and really thinking about what you've done throughout this whole time period. And I'm just so excited for where you are today. And this conversation is going to allow everybody to hear just kind of how all of these pieces have come together. But, you know, when we look at these industries right now where, you know, we just went through, so just putting it in context for everyone listening, we just went through the first, you know, Congress figuring out the first set of money and where it's going to go. And right or wrong, everybody is worried about, you know, these big entities, you know, what's going to happen to the airline industry or the hotel industry. And there's like farmers, like we just keep forgetting about the farmers and we keep forgetting about our food supply. And so, you know, I think in this piece, I'm just so grateful for what you are currently doing at the Rodale Institute to help us figure out how we can, one, not forget about those individuals, but also how we can figure out how to scale what they're doing and have it be better for everyone and for our planet. So with that said, you know, I think the key thing for me to start us off with, I always like to have a lexicon, like, are we all talking about the same thing? So maybe you could introduce yourself and let everyone know that by way of introduction, what the definition of regenerative agriculture is.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much, Ashley and Robin. It's a true honor to be here. I feel overjoyed by this opportunity to share more about our movement with your audience. And Ashley, yes, it has been some time. I think we've known each other for almost going on 15 years, and it's been a real joy to go in and out of one another's circles and to stay connected all these years. So I'm here today really to share more about the work of not only Rodale Institute, but this entire movement that has been given birth called regenerative agriculture. And certainly we are seeing people rush in with all kinds of definitions for this idea of regenerative. And you have to look back 30 or 40 years to Robert Rodale, who was our founder's son, who began using the word regenerative in front of agriculture. He's really credited for coining that term because he was traveling around the world during the 1970s and into the early 80s. And he was noticing agricultural systems in some third world countries like in on the continent of Africa and in Asia. And he thought to himself that he began seeing the word sustainability being used in a very ubiquitous way. And he felt like that was a terrible word, especially the more he got around the world to see these different broken agricultural systems. And he thought to himself, there's really nothing here to sustain. The word sustainability doesn't even give voice to what needs to happen in these parts of the world. So he started using the word regenerative agriculture. And the way that Robert Rodale began using that word and Rodale Institute continues to use it today is this idea that when we improve the health of the soil, when farmers focus all their energies on improving soil health, the idea is that the crops that are grown in that soil get healthier over time. They become more nutrient dense. They become more laden with the phytonutrients and the micronutrients that you and I need to be healthier. So therefore, as the soil health improves, the crop health improves, the people consuming that food, their health improves. The farmer growing that food becomes more lucrative and more economically viable. And before you know it, little by little, the entire community gets better and better and better over time. And thus the word regenerative was born. If you fast forward to today, we've recently launched a new certification, which I'm sure we'll unpack throughout this episode. We've launched a new certification in agriculture, and it's the highest bar standard in food production. We're calling it the Regenerative Organic Certification. And that certification entails three pillars, three points to the definition of the word regenerative agriculture. And that is soil health, animal welfare. In other words, how are the animals in this system being treated? And then mostly human labor and human well-being. How are the farmers and farm workers in the system being treated? Are they being paid a fair wage? Are they given access to healthcare? And so that's really how Rodale Institute has evolved our definition of that word regenerative.
So I think it's critically important because I love how you guys have evolved as an organization and how sincere and profoundly deep the start of the organization was. And I think for the consumer, this term regenerative is new. The movement is so clearly being led by the farmers, which I love too, because they recognize and understand how important it is for soil health. It is helping them reduce their chemical input costs and so many other valuable things. But I think one of the things that keeps coming up is that if the consumer has been buying organic and is really beginning to understand the value in organic, And then when we introduce regenerative, a lot of the consumers are thinking, well, isn't organic already regenerative? So how can we do a better job of not making this an either or, but a both and?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm so glad you brought that up, Robin, because we have all, every one of us here in this conversation today, and many leaders in this industry have done so much great work over the last 20 years to build equity in the word organic. And by the way, our founder, J.I. Rodale, coined the term organic back in May of 1942. He's really known as the pioneer of the organic food movement in North America. And so we've built that word, and we've built trust into that word, and consumers can and should associate safety and health and so many good qualities and attributes with that word. And frankly, we need consumers to continue to demand organic produce when they go to the grocery store and organic food. So we believe that it's in any industry, right? In any industry, I don't care what industry we're talking about, we always innovate. There needs to be innovation. And in the food industry, particularly around the word organic, we passed the National Organic Production Act in 1990, and it ultimately hit shelves in the year, I think around 2000 is when we began seeing the National Organic Certification on shelves. But we really haven't done a great job as an industry evolving that standard over the last 20 years. And so I think this whole regenerative movement that is sweeping over us is really a sign of innovation. It's about raising the bar. As many multinational large-scale food companies have rushed into the organic movement, unfortunately, we've seen, like in anything, people are always looking to, cut corners. And we've seen larger and larger scale companies move into the space, we've begun to leave the small scale farmer behind, and we can't let that happen. And so I think this regenerative movement is an opportunity for us to push the bar higher and to give consumers another level of safety and credibility and efficacy to purchase and to trust. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't stop demanding organic. We need to keep demanding organic, and we need to start looking for regenerative on top of that.
Yeah. And I think to emphasize that again, like for a farmer that has been growing things conventionally with genetically engineered crops and the portfolio of chemicals that are required to grow them, sometimes that leap all the way out to organic is too far. It's like asking somebody to convert political parties. It can be that deep. What I love is that regenerative invites that participation. And I think for us, what we're hoping for is for more and more participation as farmers move along this spectrum into regenerative agriculture, embracing these practices towards soil health. And yes, if they want to then advance all the way to organic for the premium, then, those tools and those resources are available, and it doesn't feel quite as far away or as intimidating or as threatening. And what's great is that in the conversations that we've been having with companies like General Mills and AB InBev, Anheuser-Busch, as they host these forums and these meetings where they invite farmers to come in and learn about regenerative agriculture, AB InBev said they were hoping to have 20 farmers show up for their first one, and they had 80. So clearly, at the farm level, they recognize how important regenerative agriculture is to soil health. And I think to have them at the table for this conversation is so incredibly inspiring and exciting right now.
That's exciting. Yeah, that's so cool.
I want to jump in on that because, one of the most profound experiences in my nutrition education occurred for me at Rodale Institute. And I was able to sit down, I'm a science professional, right? And so I'm sitting down with research. Rodale has done, I think, if not the longest, you'll correct me, Jeff, but a very long-standing organic trial. And I got to see the soil, the two sides of it, soil that was chemically farmed and soil that had been farmed organic. And I remember just staring at it in front of me and just sitting there and saying to the team at the time, I was like, oh, look at this. This is soil that doesn't have the nutrients to support proper, sugar metabolism. So here's diabetes. Look, this is soil that doesn't have the nutrients to support bone health. So here's osteoporosis. This is the soil that doesn't have, and on and on. And I could just, as a clinician, I could see the science right there. And so I think one of the things that I'm curious with, that experience is what has always helped me lead from a science conversation when I've talked about why organic. It's not about, is there a greater nutrient density? The nutrient density, you have to be looking at both the nutrient density of the soil based on the location, because all soil is different. but also things like phytonutrients, and then of course an absence of certain pesticides and herbicides. So I think my question is, with this regenerative organic, is the science, how are you determining it, and what's the science behind this that's helping us understand, and how quickly, like, what's the expectation if we start, when we purchase regenerative organic, will we be seeing, you know, is it part of something like we can say, hey, within a year we could see this, or within, you know, that turnover time? So take me through a little bit of the science side of it.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely, Ashley. And yeah, to your point, Rodale Institute, we're a nonprofit research, we're a science organization. We're a team of 50 employees, many of whom are PhD scientists. And our global headquarters in Pennsylvania is based on 333 acres. And we call it a living laboratory. It's a farm, but it's really a laboratory where at any given time, there's about 26 active research projects going on. And one of them that you just alluded to is called the Farming Systems Trial, which is the longest running side-by-side comparison of organic and conventional grain crops in North America. So it's this 40-year study that's been looking at organic crops like corn, soybeans, wheat, oats, grown literally directly next to conventional chemically sprayed plots, replicating what's happening on a mass scale here in the United States and all over the world. And during the course of these four decades, we've seen some incredible data that has shown that this regenerative organic process outperforms conventional farming, especially when you just isolate yields. If you just want to look at yields, we're seeing upwards of 35 to 40% increases in yields in the organic systems, particularly in the years of drought and extreme weather. So extreme rain, drought, which we're seeing more and more frequently these days. And then when you go further down, you're looking at things like energy consumption, where the organic systems are using 45% less energy to produce the same amount of food. We're looking at things like water infiltration and how much water we're saving in the organic systems, which way outperforms what's happening in the chemical plots. And then what you're alluding to is sort of like this, you know, storage of carbon at deep depth. So we're beyond just the conversation around yields, we're beginning to look at things like, okay, well, which system actually improves the health of the soil? Which system increases the phytonutrients in the food? And most of all, how are we storing carbon? And when you begin getting into that part of the conversation, that's when we begin to address the climate change or the changing out of our weather patterns. We can actually look at regenerative agriculture as a tool to improve all these things. And so we're not just talking about, you know, something that has to happen over a 40-year period. We're seeing dramatic results in 1, 2, 5, 10 years. So in those very short amount of time, we begin to see an uptake of nutrients in the soil, and therefore an uptake of nutrients in the food that's grown. We're beginning to see carbon storage, soil organic matter is kind of the measurement that we use to look at carbon. And we're seeing soil organic matter improve from anywhere from 1% at the beginning to, 6% soil organic matter within 5 to 10 years. So we're seeing dramatic improvements in all of these metrics and measurements because of the way we're treating the soil.
Jeff, what's one of the greatest misperceptions that you'd like to address around this?
One of the greatest misperceptions of this idea of regenerative agriculture?
Yeah, because I think, there's a lot of back and forth around it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you're talking to a farmer, Robin, the greatest misperception is that a farmer thinks he or she are going to have to take off their green John Deere hat and drive a different color tractor, or, I think the greatest misperception is that farmers are going to have to do something radically different. And while parts of that are true, we're all still wearing the same color green. We're all still driving the same tractors. It's just the methodologies change. We always say that if you're a great conventional farmer, you're going to make a great regenerative organic farmer. Good managers of farms know how to pivot. And, Rodale is really excellent at giving knowledge and best practices to these farmers. So I think that there's a lot of fear in farming communities because of the fear of being ostracized or because, okay, all of a sudden I'm doing something different. How am I going to be viewed in the community? But the reality is that we're seeing when one farmer makes the leap, then others in the community follow. You know, farmers have such a tight-knit community that they often don't want to be seen as the odd man out or the odd woman out. And so I think that really is probably the biggest obstacle that we have to overcome is almost like the sociology aspects of farming.
Yeah, I totally hear you on that. I mean, I'm from Texas and have had conversations with farmers and they've said, you know, if I start talking about organic, my kid might not make the football team. So I think the cultural piece is significant. But like you said, you know, it's we're not asking you to change out your tractor, the color of your hat. I mean, all the tools are still there. It really is. I think that's where I think these big brands stepping in and inviting these conversations and having so many of these farmers show up at the table right now is what makes this so inspiring.
Yeah, we just, Rodale Institute just launched a consultancy last year where we're now putting our trained agronomists on farms all over the United States and literally holding the hand of farmers as they make this transition. And we've begun that work right here in our own backyard in Pennsylvania, where in just 8 months, we now have 61 farms under management, where 61 farms have raised their hand and have elected to begin embracing these new ways of farming and transitioning their operations. And you know, what's really interesting, I think maybe most interesting above all about that work is that, you know, we're not asking the farmers to transition their entire operation. We would never suggest that a farmer that's farming 500 or 1,000 or 10,000 acres to transition 100% of the operation. We're saying, hey, take 10%. If you take 10% of your total acreage, allow us to walk down that path with you, show you the best practices, show you how to do it. We're going to set you up for success. And that's really what we've seen in the first year of launching this consultancy is the farmers were just so astonished by the results that they generated in 1 year that they're now wanting to accelerate from 10% adoption to 50% adoption and more in year two. So we're seeing rapid acceleration of acreage because farmers are getting confidence right out of the gate.
So if I put my consumer hat on, you know, I started my career working in advertising and selling American sugared cereals, and we put a lot of different marketing logos and things on the packages and, you know, really taught people to look for those logos. And, you know, in the last like 20 years, it's been logo mania and just so much confusion. So, you know, I've had people ask questions about, you know, am I supposed to look for non-GMO or, you know, what's the difference between that and organic? Or, you know, I've seen products from, you know, if I'm overseas that are biodynamic and they have bio on them, or, you know, what about, how does this compare to gluten-free or, you know, all these other things. So how do we simplify this for the consumer, you know, in terms of the, what they're going to start to see and what confidence, or is there something that will actually become easier for them as this regenerative organic certification moves forward and we see it translate to what they're purchasing?
Mm-hmm. Great question. Hey, Ashley, I didn't know that about you. You and I both started our careers in advertising. That's how I got my start too. The whole intention of Rodale Institute launching the regenerative organic certification was for the exact reason that you just laid out. If you know the farmer, Will Harris, he's a well-known livestock farmer from Georgia. He sat in a room with us as we begun to put together and ideate around the standard. And he said that some days he feels like a Boy Scout filling his shirt with merit badges. He said every day of the week, I have a different certifier on my farm. And it was frustrating to Will and to many other farmers around the United States. And so one of the intentions of launching this new certification was that we could go to the market, go to consumers and say, you know what, when you're buying regenerative organic products, you can trust that they're also fairly traded. You can trust that there's the highest degree of animal welfare. You can trust that the products were ethically sourced. And so we worked with all the major certifiers in all those different realms. And they were, all those people were at the table when we authored this standard. And we tried to represent all the major standards in food production. And I must say that the baseline to even becoming regenerative organic is that your brand must be certified organic under an accredited certifier. So I think the main point that I want to underscore there is that in no way are we suggesting that brands abandon organic. We need to continue to support the USDA and the great work that's being done out of the National Organic Program. But we're also trying to consolidate for brands that when you become regenerative organic, you're covering a lot of bases.
It is just heavy, heavy lifting and so much work for so many decades, Jeff. I really have incredible respect for the Rodale family, for the vision that they set forth so many decades ago, and then for the tenacity and strength and love and passion that you guys as an organization consistently show up with. It is remarkable. And I love listening to you talk, and I know that we could probably go on for hours. So, Jeff, now we're going to dive into these rapid fire questions, and I really want to give some time to this first one. What is the greatest obstacle that you've overcome?
Yeah, that's a big question, because I don't believe that I would be here today doing this work that I'm doing, which has really become, you know, my heart and soul and my passion, if it wasn't for the greatest obstacle that I've ever overcome in my life. And that was in the fall of 2016, I became mysteriously ill with all kinds of symptoms that were quite debilitating. It happened very quickly and suddenly, where I fell ill with fever and extreme fatigue and body aches and unexplainable symptoms that just really were quite scary. And it led me to go to a doctor. At the time, I've always been a very healthy, proactively healthy adult. And I'll admit that I didn't have a doctor that I had a really good relationship with. And so I ended up going to a traditional internal medicine doctor, and he began to evaluate me. And his conclusion early on was that I had some kind of a virus that was pretty typical of the changing seasons. And his suggestion to me would be that I would go home and rest and take as much time as I needed off of work until I felt well enough to go back. And so I took his cues, and days went by, and I still wasn't getting better, and it became a little concerning. So I went back to the doctor. He began to do a panel of blood work, and all the blood work he ran was really quite inconclusive. He didn't find anything major in the blood work that would lead him to diagnose me with any condition. And so that went on for weeks and weeks. I originally got sick in October, and by the end of December, I had to call out of work and go on medical leave. I was literally incapacitated. I was having really quite scary symptoms, like still getting these high fevers and hallucinations. And at that point, it turned into like panic attacks and things that I'd never really had any experience with before. And I went back to the doctor, and after weeks of him seeing me and sending me home, he finally said to me, "Jeff, I really don't have I don't have anything else to offer to you. I'll refer you to a specialist, to an infectious disease doctor. And by the way, I really think that this is, you're experiencing, you know, stress and anxiety and depression from your work." At the time, I was doing quite different work than I am today. But that was all he could offer me. And so at that point, I went out on medical leave and was probably the lowest point of my life. I was at home. I was bedridden. I was sick. I was probably 30 pounds lighter than I am now, unable to do much of anything at all. And so a good friend of mine referred to me to what's known as a functional medicine doctor. And I got in to see him several weeks later. And very quickly, he began to run his own kind of tests. And his panel of blood work led me to be diagnosed with chronic Lyme disease. So at that point, the doctor did the right kind of testing. He found that I had Lyme disease, among some other complications. And he began treating me. And what's really interesting is that looking back on that, he was beginning to take this approach called functional medicine, which is really a systems-based approach to medicine. It's a lot like regenerative agriculture is to farming. Functional medicine is to you know, the medical profession. And so my doctor began to help me to see that my body was a biological system. And it wasn't just, he wasn't just saying, let's treat the symptoms. He was saying, let's rebuild you from the soil up. And he began to work with me from a nutrition perspective and from a healthy lifestyle perspective. We began using all kinds of detox therapies. And at no point did he prescribe medicine, but it was more of like a multi-prong approach, systems-based approach that over weeks and months, I started to feel better and better and better. And it was in that time that, in that darkest time, I had been serving on the board of directors of the Rodale Institute, but I had been doing some other work in corporate America. And I finally had the courage in that sort of low moment of my life to say, you know, when I feel well enough to, I think I want to make a leap and go join the leadership team at Rodale Institute and really help them to accelerate the growth of their work. And again, I don't think if it wasn't for that challenge, that obstacle coming into my life as a gift, I can now look back at it on the season that was really a gift to me. I don't think I'd be doing what I'm doing today.
Gosh, I love that. And it dovetails beautifully into the next question, because I think so many people have this awakening due to some kind of health crisis, either personally or with a spouse or with a child or with even with a pet, you know, someone that you love is suddenly in crisis. So what do you see as the greatest opportunity in this movement?
Well, I think the greatest opportunity is the acceleration of consumer purchasing of organic food. You know, if 16% of the food in the United States was purchased organically, the conventional agricultural industry would lose its financial stability. And that's not my data. That's not Rodale's data. That's data that I believe it was leaked from some internal economic theorists inside of Monsanto before they were purchased by Bayer. And so there's this consumer demand right now. We're at, 6% total market share. And that happened in a relatively short amount of time. So I think what's exciting is that consumers can literally change the future of humanity simply by what they put on their plate, and that we can accelerate this adoption of regenerative agriculture all over the world if we begin to educate consumers and ask them to support this movement by what they buy at the grocery store.
A massive, massive opportunity on that part. And, you know, I just love what you were doing with the systems comparison. So I just have to jump in there, you know, in terms of, I love thinking about in medicine, you know, what functional medicine and really looking at root cause is to our current medical system and looking at regenerative. So thank you. I hadn't thought about it that way before. You know, I think back to who you've had the opportunity, and this is just in your professional life, to work with so many people that really inspire me. And as I shared, you know, had a really profound impact on my career. So I'm curious about this next question, whether it's more come from personal or professional, but so who inspires you, Jeff, and why?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I'm fortunate enough to work around every year we host somewhere between 20 and 40 interns from all over the world that come to the Rodale Institute because they want to pursue a future career in agriculture. So these are young, highly educated, many of whom are women, young people that are coming to us to train, to learn how to be a farmer. So who inspires me is quite simple. It's farmers. I'm deeply inspired by farmers, particularly this younger generation of farmers that are coming back home, in some cases that are taking over the family farm, but reinventing it in a whole new way and adopting these regenerative practices. They're beginning to utilize the farm and see the farm in a lot more holistic, opportunistic way than perhaps the generations before them. So I'm really inspired by farmers. I'm inspired by all farmers, but I'm really inspired by the farmers that are on the front lines every day trying to change the face of how we produce food around the world. And that's really exciting to me.
1,000%. I know right now Robin is like hands in the air and in agreement. thank you on that one. And this, again, I think will dovetail nicely, potentially, into the next part of the conversation. I spoke to it a little bit in the introduction. You know, I think I'm pretty frustrated to just see the food movement and the participants, the makers in the food movement, not being considered at the level of some of these other industries as we're having conversations, mm-hmm. Certainly right now. So if we just took all that away and you march yourself, which I know you've done frequently, but if you march yourself right to Congress, what's the one message you would want to send to Congress right now?
Yeah, well, this is a very auspicious time to be asking me that question because, you know, of all that we're facing with COVID-19, the coronavirus and all the holes in the system that this one major crisis has unearthed. You know, if we think that we have gaps in the public health sector, what would it look like if we had one cog in the wheel come undone in the agricultural, system? Most people are so divorced from where their food comes from and how that food is produced. We just go to the grocery store and expect that the shelves are going to be full and stocked. Well, guess what? Most of the food that is consumed around the United States comes from other countries. You know, how is it that we live in an agricultural-based society in the United States with some of the most precious arable farmland in the world, and we're net importing most of our food? And most of the food we're net importing is lacking vital nutrients for a healthy society. So if I were to stand before Congress today, I would encourage all of them to double down on our efforts to bring our food production back to the United States. Moreover, to incentivize people to purchase food locally and in their own communities. And we need to prioritize agricultural policies that make it easier for farmers to transition to regenerative production systems so that, that they have a future and that they have markets that will support them when they make that leap. So I think that's what I would say today.
I love that answer. Every day of the week, any time of the year, it is a great answer.
And because we like to think about food and think about all the different components of food, what it means, how it makes us feel, we love to close with the ask of, if you were a food, what would you be and why?
Oh my gosh, that's overthinking that, I would say it's an avocado because that happens to be my favorite food on the planet. I literally eat an organic avocado every day of the year. And I think it's the perfect food. So I think I'd want to be an avocado.
Awesome. I love it. I was wondering if you were going to say like hemp seeds or mushrooms or something that like is alternative, but I also feel like I've been learning more and more about too, just the peels of the avocado and some of the other pieces. So I'm sure there's a regenerative component in there as well, but such a great conversation, Jeff.
Can I say one more thing? I think because of the times we're living in right now and when we're doing this interview, most of America is at home with their families, with their loved ones. And if I can offer one action item for this entire audience, I think it's to use this time to connect over meals, but also to take a moment of silence at each meal with our families to think about our farmers. And, I would, if I were to close my eyes and think 3 months from now, and let's say we're on the other side of this crisis and we're all back to our jobs and life goes on, I hope that if we did one thing, we would use this time to build a relationship with a farmer, to get to know a farmer, that every single person listening to this would begin to establish a relationship with someone in their community that's producing healthy, nourishing food, and that you make a decision that we all put a stake in the ground today, that we're going to support that farmer no matter what going into the future, and that would be the real change, the real shift in our consciousness as an individual and as families during this season. And that we can reconnect to the soil and to our health because we have a relationship with a farmer.
Absolutely. I was thinking about that. And I was thinking also about what are some of the things that we can intentionally put on our plate during that time period. And, one thing for me right now, I've been talking to, as I talked about in the introduction, is just making it easy for people to feel, to one, do better, like to be eating better. And number two, to feel like they're doing better. They're like, if they're listening to this and thinking like, hey, what could I be doing? And so, for me, it really comes back to plant-based and a variety of plants. Whether you're looking to support your body's immune efforts, I don't like to just say your immune system, because your body's immune efforts mean supporting all the systems of the body. And I think that, one of those pieces is just really understanding the power of plants and how to make that delicious and, incorporate it. I will say I've been pushing a little harder on people for things like hemp seeds and mushrooms and legumes, because I've started to understand, their role in farming and just their regenerative capabilities as foods. Are there any foods that you have been adding to your plate during this with sort of that intention?
Oh man, yeah, absolutely. For sure, mushrooms. I think reishi, they say, has incredible immune benefits and strengthens the lungs. So I've been adding reishi to my diet every single day. And we have a local mushroom farmer here that produces some amazing gourmet, different varieties of mushrooms that we've been purchasing from them. And then bone, I personally like lots of soups. My wife and I tend to eat a lot of soups in the spring, summer, fall. Sorry, spring, fall, and winter. And so we're making a lot of soups at home right now, a lot of cooked foods, a lot of slow-cooked foods, and beginning to build our immunities and getting ready for spring. But pretty soon we'll be adding lots of greens and spring onions and all kinds of alliums that are going to be popping up. So we're kind of right in between seasons here in Pennsylvania. So still eating some warming foods, but about to make that leap into some of the cold crops that'll be springing up in our garden.
Jeff, we really appreciate you. Appreciate your just absolute commitment to this. It's so clear listening to you. It's clear that you see the enormous opportunity and you recognize how to help facilitate that transition, which to me is just the biggest part of the work. So thank you so much for dedicating all that you are to this.
Well, thank you both, Robin and Ashley. This has been a real honor, a real joy to be here with you today and to share this hopeful message with your entire audience. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, ladies. Another excellent podcast. I always hear Ashley saying you are what you eat. And I think this podcast drives that home, that it's really, really important that we make the right decisions when deciding what to put into our bodies. Another motivating podcast as always. And thank you, Jeff. It's obvious to see that you are bringing mindful leadership to corporations and helping people reach their greatest potential. And that's what we kind of want to do. They're the guests we want on this show. We want people talking, motivating, inspiring, and bringing the best out of people and bringing the greatest potential out of people. And Jeff, you're doing that, and we appreciate everything you do, and keep up the good work. Right, look out for our next podcast. It'll be with you before you know it.